It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul's here. Mary Jo Foley is too. We're going to talk, of course, about Microsoft's earnings report, the big loss on Surface RT. They say it's not the end, folks. Well, of Surface RT, maybe the end of the loss. They'll also talk a little bit about the Nexus 7 and the Google Chromecast and everything Microsoft. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 321, recorded July 25th, 2013. Fresh paint. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files for you automatically and continually for only $59.99 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code Windows and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that talks all about Windows and Skype and Xbox and anything of the Microsoft branding on it.
Skype today, shall we?
Yes, we love Skype. You know, it's funny because I've tried every alternative and we can continue to investigate alternatives. But we, as you know, Paul, we keep using Skype for the shows where the hosts aren't in the studio and it works. I mean, it does work for us with occasional.
We need alcohol today.
Minor problem. Paul Thurrott is from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, the author of so many great books. Just finished the Windows Phone Book at windowsphonebook.com and is now starting the what? What are you starting?
We'll get there. It's my tip of the week.
Ah, new book. Good. All right. We also have Mary Jo Foley. She is the queen of Microsoft at ZDNet. Allaboutmicrosoft.com is the quick way to get to her blog posts. And every week at this time, we talk about Microsoft. I'm really well, I guess you wouldn't want to lead with Microsoft's earnings. Well, we did talk a little bit about it last week. I guess later in the show we'll talk about kind of a week later what it all means.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe we should start with the Lumia. You went to the Lumia event, but I take it you guys now have look at that. I see a little yellow something something. Look at that. Do you have one too, Paul?
I do.
Nice.
Yep.
Oh, yours looks like
you didn't
like
get the yellow one, huh?
No, Mary Jo's is yellow.
Mine matches my hair.
Are there other colors besides black and yellow?
White.
White
and yellow, white and yellow. Yep.
White, black, and yellow.
So?
It's okay.
Really? No, come
Better
on.
Better than Skype or worse than Skype?
Yeah.
So the camera, the whole point of this is the 41 megapixel PureView camera.
Yeah.
And images I've seen are just fantastic.
Yeah, I posted some pictures of a bee that was on a leaf, and
a macro.
It looks like a regular cell phone photo, but then you zoom it in, and it is every hair on its leg, every little like thing that's on a what are you looking at? No, it's not on that. Go to winsupersite.com.
Click the link that you provided.
Oh, I gave you the wrong. Oh, that's a different thing.
A different thing. Oh, it's on the Win Superset. Let's go to the Win Superset. Sorry. Win Super. Oh, look, it fills it in because I've been there so many times. Lumia 1020
scroll down a little
review.
Bit. Jeez. Nice to see ads on my
site. I'd like to see this ad a little more. Okay, thank you. Yeah. People say, Leah, why don't you run ad block? Because I want to support Paul. So Paul's review.
Yeah, so it's this. I don't have the full res versions on my site, but if you there's a pretty good YouTube
video
at the bottom.
Wow.
Yeah, there's the B.
Wow.
So that's very typical for the camera. It's
look at the depth of field. That's surprising on it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
And I love these dials, on-screen dials.
Yeah, that interface works really well.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing that's in there is like that concert video. So you know if you've ever gone to a concert how loud and distorted it is.
I'm going to go to
They talked about how you could do this, and you bump it up to, this goes up to probably 1080p or whatever.
1080p, here we go.
Should I do the music too?
Yeah. Whoa!
So
Sounds like the radio.
Yeah, one is that the sound is amazing, better than it was in person. You know, the other one is that I'm just holding that with my hands, and I'm not, you know, I haven't had a stroke or anything, but I don't have this.
The steady,
it's pretty steady.
Yeah. Image, optical image stabilization is built in. That's pretty amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of an empty concert.
No, actually, that's just the end of the like the floor section, because so that's a football field, so they don't.
Oh, okay. So you can't.
So I'm actually, I am literally one football field's distance away from the stage. So I'm in row one of the first set of seats.
Did you zoom in at all?
No.
That's good.
The other thing is, like, if you, it's not perfect, but again, if you blow it up, I have a set of shots that are in video form that show just regular pictures and then the zoomed in version of that picture, you know, as you go. So you can see the actual. So it's if you scroll down.
Oh, my God. He's like the Skype's ringtone. I can't stop him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the next, it's the next video down the page.
Okay. I have to go back now. I just, you know, sometimes when that happens, the best thing to do is just close your entire browser.
Bon Jovi needs to be heard, Leo.
I'm just assuming your wife made you go to that. That's all I'm saying.
Actually, it was a friend of mine, but.
Wait a minute, you had a mandate to see Bon Jovi?
I really don't care. So.
No, I'm going to play it right now. Here it comes.
Just since we're on the topic, I was actually amazed nobody made fun of me for this. The opening band was Jay Giles' band, which I sort of thought.
Love.
Yeah, and they were terrible.
No, they haven't aged well, apparently. Look at these images. This is amazing from a camera phone. Well, you're not looking at them, but if you were, you'd love them. Let me go back.
So each one of these is like a, you know, the regular shot and then like a zoomed in version.
Oh,
so
I see. Like I see what you're doing.
Right there.
And that's the point of 41 megapixels is you can crop it.
Yeah. Yeah, they call it reframing it or whatever. You know, you can make multiple versions of a photo.
Wow, look at that.
And so I was talking to Mary Jo about this after the, you know, after we put our reviews up. You know, it's weird because it forces you to do things differently. Because with a camera, you zoom in on stuff. And with this one, the deal is just take the picture. You can zoom in later.
Right.
Yeah, which is so, you know, if you're used to using other phone cameras, that's such a weird thing, right?
Wow.
Yeah. I was telling Paul, so one of the first things I tried to do with mine was take a beer picture, right? And I tried to do it the way I normally do it, which is you get up close and you zoom in, and it was horrible. It was all blurry and awful. And Paul's like, no, go back and take it and then reset it and crop it.
Yeah, there's actually, I don't remember where I saw this, but somewhere in Nokia's documentation, there was a comment that said, maybe it was even in their spec sheet. They said, you have to be 12 or 13 centimeters away. So, you know, if you have like a digital SLR or a point and click that is a really nice optical zoom or whatever, you can get right up on top of something, put it in a macro mode, and then you can take pictures of small things or you can zoom in on stuff or whatever. And this camera, you don't do that. You have to be back. Like you just take the picture. You know, you can get all this surrounding gunk in that you don't care about, but then you can reframe it, and the details are astonishing.
Yeah. The other weird adjustment for people who are used to Windows phones, which Paul warned me about, and again, I didn't heed his warning, was you don't press the screen, right? Like, you don't hit the screen, tap the screen to take the picture. You have to tap the either the camera button or the little like camera icon that comes up in the ProCam application.
Yeah, like on
so
a, this is how an iPhone works.
So I hitting the screen thinking I was taking pictures, and then no, I was not.
So if you come to this from any other phone, this is actually the way every other phone works.
Right.
So you kind of frame the picture in the viewfinder. You tap optionally on the screen where you want it to focus. Otherwise, it will do autofocus, obviously. Yeah. And then you can tap another button that's on screen that looks like a camera, and that takes the picture. Mm-hmm. So the problem is on Windows Phone, I've been using Windows Phone for 3 years now, right? Yeah, 3 years. And, you know, in Windows Phone, you hold it up, you tap on the screen, and it focuses and takes the picture in that one tap. So I've lost at least 15 pictures because I walk up, I go, and a little focus light flashes. You're like, I took a picture, and then you walk away. And no, you didn't. you have to, it's weird. It's hard to get used to.
Yeah. And so I think Paul, you were probably way more comfortable getting this phone and taking pictures with it right off the bat than I was, because as I noted in my review on my site, I don't take a lot of pictures except beer pictures pretty much. And, So it, for me, it was kind of intimidating. I'm like, oh, there's so many settings, and like half of them I don't really understand fully. Like I know what ISO is, I know what aperture is, but I don't really know how one setting affects the others. So I was a great test for this phone, actually. It's like if I could figure it out, pretty much anybody can. And it took me a few tries, right? But even if you just leave the settings on auto, you take amazing pictures, even if you know nothing about taking pictures. Which is great.
Yeah, and those depth of field shots, I didn't do a thing. I mean, and I went, all of the photos that I posted, and not all of the, well, almost, I'd say, let's say 95% of the pictures I've taken, I didn't change a thing. It was just, this is just automatic. You know, all I did was focus, and then it would, you know, and I set the, I don't know how the flash is set by default, but mine is, I always set my Lumia, my Lumia cameras regardless, and I did it with this one. To use the flash only for the focus. It uses the LED flash for focus only. So it's weird. You take a picture and it flashes. And I think a lot of, if you're taking a picture of people, they probably think you just took a picture and maybe they start moving or something. But the actual picture gets taken, you know, a millisecond later or whatever, because it's just using that for the focus.
Yeah.
I think this camera's amazing.
Did you post the pictures anywhere we could see the full quality, or is it?
I did, yeah. I got, although let me see.
You got in trouble.
Really? Yeah. Why?
Yeah, I got. I posted them to where Flickr, Dropbox, and SkyDrive, and each one of them shut me. The deal on Flickr was that they aren't full size. So let me see if I can.
Right, but SkyDrive and Dropbox limit the amount.
They were both like, "Hey, thank you for abusing your account. You can't share anything." let me see if the
one of the issues, of course, is not merely the number of pixels and so forth, but the amount of sharpening and crunching that the camera does. And I have to say, the ones I'm seeing now, it's hard to tell on YouTube because it's further compressed, but I'd be curious to see what the actual raw images are. See how much compression there is.
See if you can refresh the notes and see if that link I added to the top of the notes works. And, you know, maybe it's come back up. I don't know.
Your Skype is also...
I know. Your Skype... You shouldn't have complained about Skype. Now your Skype's all like...
Punishing you. Punishing you. We'll see if it gets better. Sometimes... Is it...
they heard you rail on them, and that's that.
Yeah. They said, no, we're not going
to... Well, I shouldn't keep screwing around with stuff.
Yeah, there's something... It sounds like a bandwidth issue.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's at our end, because Mary Jo seems fine, so...
No, I can't...
That could be here.
Oh, there it is.
There. Yeah. You just got fixed.
It just got better. Here it is. So this is just this. I won't share this with anybody. This is my...
No, I put this up publicly. It's okay.
Oh, this is the Dropbox link that...
This isn't the... this is a zip file. I actually also have like a... it's just the photos, you know, but I think that one is the one that got shut down.
How big are the... there it is, bees. How big are the images on the camera? I mean, if you just have...
Yeah.
Does it save it as a...
Yeah, so actually that's worth talking about. So... Every time you take a photo with a 1020, it saves two files to the camera, to the phone.
Right.
One is a very large original photo. It's for a 16:9 shot. It's 33-34 megapixels, something like that.
See,
9 to 12 megabytes per photo.
Up here in the. I mean, you know, you're not going to replace a really high quality DSLR with this, but I have to say,
this is
good. It's going to replace a point and shoot, perhaps. Look at the detail on the leaf.
Yeah.
It
keeps going.
And I'm
it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And then, so the second file it saves is a 5-megapixel JPEG that is for sharing. So, and it's the thing that shows up around other apps on your phone. And if you want to, you know, say, here I am and on Facebook, that's the version that goes to Facebook, the 5 megabyte version. I'm sorry, 5-megapixel version. Now, those photos of the bee, for example, when I'm looking through the viewfinder at the bee is a black speck in the middle of the thing. I didn't zoom in, right? So to focus this, what I did was I tapped on the screen in the middle wherever, you know, roughly in that area.
Right.
And then I took the photo. So it wasn't until later that I could look at them and realize how they came out. You know, I mean.
That's interesting, huh?
Well, I mean, you could do it on the camera. I just took, I'm like, I'll take
after
a bunch of these.
After the
fact. I actually took a bunch because I was afraid I wasn't going to get a good one. You know, and then I looked at them afterwards and I was like, oh, wow, these look incredible. And then you get them home and they're even better on a computer because you have a huge screen and you can zoom in and it's like, wow, this is was actually pretty impressive.
Okay, so now that I'm looking at the original JPEGs, these are pretty good quality.
Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. Yep. So the image we're looking at, is this the 5 megabyte one or the...
No, that's the whatever, full, 9 to 12 megabyte version. Okay.
31, is that right? 31 megapixels.
Yeah. It's still heavily compressed to get it down to 9 or 10.
Well, it's still a JPEG.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like a raw file or
They're doing a really pretty good job here, I got to say. Yeah. Look at that.
Well, by the way, I just want to reiterate, for a smartphone,
yeah, remember this is a phone.
Brand new territory. Yeah, this is inconceivable.
Yeah. Yeah. How about low light?
Well,
yeah, I should talk about that a little because I had a lot of trouble with the low light on my initial attempts. And I think Paul's right. Like, what's the setting called? It's called
flash for focus only. Or...
Flash for focus. If you use flash for focus and you're in a low light close setting, like you're trying to take a beer picture, perhaps, you need that one. Because if you try to play around with it
an incredible amount of experience taking photos of beer in
I do in dark lit. Places. I am the person to talk about this. And when I first tried, I didn't know about that flash focus thing. And then when I retried it yesterday, yes, that's the way to go with that. But when you're taking like a bigger room in a dark setting, you can do more with the different settings on low light. I just had really high expectations because everyone keeps saying, you know, the Lumia always has the best low light camera. And when I took the first picture, I'm like, what? It's horrible.
Right.
I mean, I've been using a 920 for months now, and I'm just very used to the way that works. And it takes amazing low light photos. You just have to know how to do it, I guess, is the way to say it. I mean,
so would you, you're not sacrificing a lot. It's a little bit thicker where the lens is.
Right. Yeah, but you know what, though? It's lighter.
And it is.
Thing that's
it's
amazing.
Really amazing.
And
as I
said to
so
the guys
much
from
lighter.
Nokia, I said I hold this thing and it feels like it's an engineering sample where it's hollow, like all of the guts are gone. And because I'm so used to the 920, it is night and day between those two devices. It's amazing.
Yeah. So
here it is against my 8X. Right, here's the blue is the 8X.
Thicker.
It's slightly thicker still. It's definitely heavier, but it's not gigantically heavier. You know, whenever I talk to people about the Lumia, I'm like, I don't want one. They weigh a ton. And you know what? We're just talking grams of difference, but they always felt so heavy and bulky, right? And this one does not.
Dense.
This one's great.
Right. Yep. A big difference. A meaningful difference.
So would you then, based on the camera alone, say this is the phone? This is it? Don't even consider
the
other phone.
Yeah. I am literally saying.
I would say no.
Okay, why not?
And I would say no because I think if you're somebody who really is into photography and really knows photography, this is the phone. And if you're somebody like me who doesn't really see all what you get from this kind of a camera, for $300 on a 2-year contract, this might be too much camera for you. I think it's my favorite Lumia phone, but. I think I would not. I wouldn't even consider making this my everyday phone, just because I don't need that much camera.
So I guess I just put a slightly different spin on that. I actually think that the weird thing about this camera is that people who really care about photography, who are photographers, are going to have a camera. You know what I mean?
Right. Or many.
You're not going to prevent that. As good as this. They'll look at this and say, wow, this is really impressive.
Yeah.
And now back to my $1,800 digital SLR, whatever they, you know.
Right.
I think there's a significant number of people, if there was some way to actually measure what we do with our phones all day, that actually spend either the most amount of time or some significant amount of time taking and working with photos, you know? And I think I fall into that group. Like, I'm not a photographer. But you know, I'm about to go on a trip and I'll take a lot of pictures and I'm going to use this. And, I usually bring around, in my day to day life, I just use my phone. And remember, actually Mary Jo and I, and my wife and, some other people were in Sonoma, you know, the weekend after we were at Build. And I brought my camera on that trip because that's what I do. Like when I go on a trip,
right.
I think, well, I need my real camera.
Right.
But then we went out and around and I took two pictures with the camera and I said, you know what? Screw this.
I'm the same. I'm the same.
My cell phone works. You know,
even in Paris, I walked around with a cell phone and not a camera. Because it's just so convenient. You're bringing the phone anyway. If it's a pretty good camera, this is obviously a very good camera, then you don't really need to carry.
So I'm going to try to do that. So we're going to Amsterdam in a couple of days, and we'll see. I mean, I am going to bring the
camera. Yeah, I would bring a good camera.
I'll take it. You know, of course, I'm not, you know.
Well, but that's
stupid,
the other thing that happens, and that's the negative, is that it's great for most stuff, but then there's that really special picture, and you can't get it with a camera phone, and you wish you had a camera. But are you going to carry a camera around all day for that one moment?
Yeah, so like I said, you know, I think people who do get this are going to open up to a whole new world of photography. I think it's just going to turn people into photography enthusiasts because it's so fun. I mean, it's so amazing what you can do. I mean, the picture of the bee and the picture of the fence were, that was just one day.
We're going to call you back. Yeah, we're going to call you back because I want this reminiscence.
Yeah, but as to other things about the phone, this is just a great basic Windows phone. It has the GDR2 operating system update on it. It has this glance screen. See where it has the time?
I like that.
Displayed.
So if you move that, it does that?
If you just like tap it or move it.
Or wave your hand.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, in the night when you want to check the time, you're like there. Oh.
Yeah,
I don't have to like unlock my phone and look at the screen. So that's a nice little, you know, it's got a lot of little niceties to it, which is cool. And plus all the Nokia apps that you get that you don't get on the HTC, like all the Pro Camera apps, and they have a lot of other apps, the mapping apps, all of that. So it's great. It's actually my first Lumia phone that I haven't just put back in the box after a day and said, not for me. I've had it out for 2 or 3 days now, still using. So that's a good test.
Yeah. So that's one of the things about Windows. Oh, there's Paul back again. One of the things about Windows phones is they're all fairly similarly capable, right?
Yeah.
So
except Nokia has all the extra applications that Nokia builds just for their own phones too.
I'm just going to nod my head now instead of saying anything.
No,
yeah, that
good.
Way you'll always sound great.
Which he did when I disagree, I'm going to be like, no.
No. No.
So, Paul, one of our listeners is asking about low light noise when you're taking a low light picture. And I don't think I noticed that.
I did not expect that at all. Yeah. No. It takes amazing low light photos.
Yeah.
Wow. This is exciting. And it does, you know, it's so interesting because I'm watching as Apple is slowly chiseled away at by all the other companies around it. You know, for a long time, the iPhone was the camera. There was no better camera in it. And I think it's lost its crown.
It took a long time, though. I mean, all the way through the release of the iPhone 5.
Oh, yeah.
The iPhone had the best camera
by far. It took until today, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think people could make certain cases. For example, the 920, the Lumia 920
in low
absolutely
light,
had better low-light photos than the iPhone 5.
Yeah. Yep.
But you had to kind of make those qualifications. You know, I think in other cases, maybe it was kind of a wash. This one, this is weird because they didn't leapfrog other people. This is a completely different thing. You know, the Moto X is going to come out. The iPhone 6 will come out. The, you know, Galaxy S11 or whatever they call it will come out. And they're not going to be able to do this. Like, I don't see anyone leaping this one in a long time.
Right.
It's just too – I mean, the only thing you could do past this, and frankly, the only thing this is missing – is an optical zoom, like an actual optical zoom. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the trick. You know, you could have like an adapter or something.
We've heard that the Moto X has a different camera than the other Android phones. It has, I think they're saying, a 10-megapixel camera. This is speculation, but we'll find out next week.
Galaxy S4 has a 16, doesn't it?
The S4 has 13,
13, okay.
And actually, the S4 to me, despite the fact that I have an HTC One, which everybody talked about the Ultra Pixel, is the best camera I've got right now. I think it beats the iPhone 5 even. But it's close. You know, you could argue it either way.
Yeah. This one, it's you're just done.
There's no argument.
You know, there's no conversation to be had here. It's
If I mean, the only thing people say to me is, but then I have to get a Windows phone, and that's a negative for some people.
Yeah. It is. And it's funny. I wrote an article about fragmentation, which my editors turned into an article about Android fragmentation. But my point was that, you know, the things that people point to on platforms that are like fragmentation aren't necessarily affecting the platform in any negative way. And certainly you can make the case with Android that Apple can talk about Android fragmentation all they want, but Android is killing them. But every platform has some form of fragmentation. And it's weird because the way that in the course of that article, which this seems to have no connection to, it occurred to me that the problem with Windows Phone is literally apps, but not in the way that people think, because we've been conditioned to believe that the capabilities of a phone are the apps.
Right.
That's how, you know, so no one looks at an iPhone and says, I'm going to use the built-in features that this thing has, like this and this. Like, no, I don't think anyone thinks that way, you know, except for the camera. But people buy Android devices, same thing. All they know is I have 800,000 to 900,000 apps I can choose from.
Right.
Everything on earth I want to do can be on this phone. All I have to do is go get them. Right. And on Windows Phone, you can make this argument like, look at all this great stuff we built in. And they're like, yeah, but what about the apps?
Yeah, it's like, you got a great camera, but you don't have Instagram. It's like...
And to those people, that means this phone can't do stuff,
right.
Even though that's a little unfair. But I think that's where we're at. I mean, I think it's...
It's not completely unfair. I mean, if you are, and I mean, a lot of people use their phones. Everybody uses a phone in a different way, but a lot of people use their phones as a social media platform. And a great camera is half of that, but the other half is Instagram or,
the other half is not Instagram. It's actually Facebook, which by the way does work. And
by the way,
you could post Instagram on Windows Phone. You just don't have an official Instagram app.
I think a lot of people, they want the official Instagram app.
Right, but I guess what I'm suggesting is that. You know, on Windows Phone, I'm sorry, an iPhone or an Android, the fact that you have to go out and find these apps and then, you know, put them on your phone is not a challenge or a problem. It's a benefit.
Right.
The fact that you have to, like, figure out how to get Instagram on your Windows Phone is apparently an unconceivable, just completely impossible challenge that anyone could ever overcome. And so this platform sucks. You know, it's
and
kind
and
of a strange
not for everybody because I don't care, but there are a lot of people...
Yeah.
That's an issue. And it's mostly kids, by the way.
I know. I'm just, by the way, it's a very real issue. That's my point.
And there are the clone apps, right? You could use too. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
For Instagram, Instagram substitute anything else. You know, Star. You know, that app. If that's the app you use, then that's going to be a deal killer.
It's not. There's a million things that go into this. I took a picture in the Boston Garden months ago where there was a giant floor-to-ceiling poster of the Boston Bruins, download our app. And it said, iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, which is like a dagger in the heart, by the way. And it's like, seriously.
But that's, I mean, you like, see that everywhere.
Right. And you get that constant reaffirmation that Windows Phone is not a player by those things. I went to the Museum of Natural History. You can scan in Washington, D.C., you can scan a code, download an app for your iPhone or your Android handset. And that's... You know, that you do see that a lot. It's real. I mean, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's easy to overcome.
Nope. But we have fresh paint.
We do have fresh paint.
What's that?
Which is pretty cool. You know, the Microsoft Fresh Paint app, which is on Windows 8, they actually moved it. So it's also available on Windows Phone now. So that's that really cool app that you can get brushes and pencils and pens and do these amazing drawings and paintings. And on Windows Phone, you can use it now as well, which is pretty cool.
Did you notice the coolest thing about it on Windows Phone, though?
What's that?
You can use it as a camera app, which means you can take a picture
into Fresh Paint.
With Fresh Paint.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Using whatever style superimposed on the photo you're taking already. So, for example, if you're saying, I want to make a pastel-looking painting of the scene, you can do it right in the viewfinder. You don't have to convert it later. I mean, you probably should. You can do it either way. Cool. It's pretty neat.
It is.
It reminds me so much of the early days of Macintosh, where it was almost two subcultures. Like the people who use Windows Phone know what it can do, and they love being in that space, and they're not even maybe that aware of what other phones are doing or whatever, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Well, we're aware. It's constantly more vice than versa. Trust me.
Yeah.
But we all
know. We complain too. Us, even the loyalist Windows Phone users complain when certain apps aren't there. But you know, it's like we always talk about here. It's like when you have 3% market share, it's tough to have a lot of leverage, right?
So that's, and getting back to the 10-20. That's the question: is Is that camera a good enough reason to get people to bite the bullet and switch to Windows Phone?
Yep. That's what they're hoping.
If you're a Windows Phone user,
it's a tough
it's a
one
no-brainer.
For me to answer because I already think Windows Phone is there, and I don't, you know, I hear you. I mean, I think for some people it would be, yeah. Yeah.
For it's some also people, it, you also have to be willing to be on AT&T. It's AT&T exclusive right now,
and that could be even bigger than any of that.
That for me is a way bigger. Style.
Yeah, I mean, no, I know people who will not leave Verizon. I will not leave Verizon. Say this.
Two things to this. I should conclude the Instagram conversation by saying, you know, it's funny to me that people can take a beautiful photo and turn it into a piece of garbage Polaroid shot or something. You know. And I guess if you're using like a low-end cell
phone camera, it doesn't matter. That's
camera,
the beauty of Instagram.
It doesn't matter, right? Because it's going to look like crap when you're done anyway. the ability to take a beautiful 41-megapixel photo and destroy it with Instagram, I guess, is something some people would want. But,
no.
You know, that's one thing. I do have a theory about the AT&T thing. And, you know, at the launch, that was a kind of a contentious moment. There was a woman behind us who railed against, I guess, Stephen Elop because Nokia, once again, has this exclusive arrangement with AT&T. And She went into a store and had a really garbage experience, and you know they dump on Windows Phone there. They don't promote it. They try to push you on Android or whatever. Certainly that stuff happens, but I think that's that leverage thing that Mary Jo was talking about, 3-4% market share, whatever. Nokia doesn't have any leverage, and the way that they can get people at wireless carriers to care about them is to offer them exclusives. And it's like the dark side of that low market share thing, where I think if Nokia was calling the shots like Apple was. They could release this phone on all 3 or 4 carriers or whatever at the same time and do that around the world, and there would be none of these problems. But this is, the choice is, do you want it to get out in a limited fashion on one carrier, or do you want it not to get out at all? Because, frankly, I think for Windows Phone, unfortunately, those are the two choices.
We're in a disruptive time in smartphones.
Yeah.
This next 6 months, through the end of the year, so 5 months, are going to be hugely disruptive. And I think when the smoke clears in January or February, it's up for grabs.
Let me throw something out. I've got this idea in my head. I threw an idea by Mary Jo yesterday, that maybe is a little half-baked, but I'll push it beyond that to something else that I think is kind of relevant, which is that Microsoft has often been criticized for being very slow-moving. And they, of course, have moved to a rapid release cycle, which actually we'll look at in a second. But you know, Apple is a company, since we're talking about phones, that moves really slow. And I'm kind of surprised that hasn't gotten more criticism from tech press.
I think it is now.
Because it's a huge problem for this company, right? I mean, I realize they just sold like a gazillion of whatever devices and they made 31 blah, 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 whatever.
I think you could make the argument this is the peak or maybe even the beginning.
Yeah, I saw a headline that said from the Washington Post, it said something like, Microsoft is doomed, but they're going to make a lot of money before that happens. And I think, I was like, okay, but why can't you write the article that says Apple is doomed, but they're going to make a lot of money? Because this is a company
that people are
writing
that article, Paul. That article is being written over
and
over.
The point is this, though, that for all of the complaints about Windows Phone, Nokia has released like, 8 devices this year or something already? Apple has released 0. Apple released an iPhone 5 that didn't have NFC. It didn't have wireless charging. It came out when did it come out? In October or something? And it's like 9 months later, they still are selling almost a year-old phone and almost a 2-year-old phone, the iPhone 4S. And by the way, a literally 3-year-old phone, the iPhone 4, that came out in June 2010. That's what they're selling. That's crazy. You know, it's so crazy slow compared to how the Android handset makers and even Windows Phone, which gets dumped on all the time for moving forward too slowly. Apple is way behind these people in that by that measure. And it's striking to me just how lackadaisical they are about it. You know, it's strange. He says to silence. So I don't know.
Sometimes great minds.
You already
minds
ran that one by me. I was
think.
Like, yeah.
I'm thinking. Yeah. Thinking.
I think the thing is, people are still buying those old ones or getting them for free,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, they absolutely are, yeah.
So that's why they're keeping them on the market. It's like, hey, if you're somebody who's really cheap and you want to, get a new phone and you go into a store and there's nothing but high-end smartphones and then somebody says, you could get this Apple one for free and you just hear Apple and free.
Wow. It's a bigger proportion of their sales.
It's not free. It's like $2,200 over 2 years.
Yeah, nothing's
I know, your contract.
There's very little difference in a free phone and a $300 phone over 2 years.
If you're saving $200.
It's 10% of the total years? Of the total cost.
Yep. Oh, my God. What are you talking about? That's crazy.
Do you think, though, most... Let's just say Americans. Do you think most Americans think that way? Like people who are in I don't. I think people who go in the store, they hear free.
No, yes.
Well, clearly
that's
they are.
What I meant.
Clearly,
they don't think they don't think the way
think
it's only 10%. No, I say this all the time on the radio show. Yeah. The cost of the phone is not the upfront cost. That's the smallest part thereof.
Well, this ties into that story we had recently about the wireless carriers and how they're offering these other ways of doing things. And you know, some carriers, I can't remember who does this, but they basically let you add a
T-Mobile added this
amount you bill every month,
and then
when
your
phone's paid off, that bill goes away.
Yeah,
smart.
Yeah. And then both of them for all three of them for a premium, you can upgrade every 6 months if you want. Actually, every year for AT&T, but you end up paying a lot more. It's like more than $3,000 over 2 years. But
what?
Yeah. But it's that same thing. You don't pay as much at time of purchase, right? It's just you trade in your phone. Oh, that's great. So I'm sure Dan Ariely has written something about this in Predictably Irrational. This is how a perfect example of how poor
economic freakonomics thing.
Yeah, we are poor economic logicians. And
this also ties into something. It has to do with the happiness that you get from purchases, right? When people who are able to pay for something up front get a lot more joy out of a purchase than people have to pay for it later. You know, imagine like if someone said, "Look, the iPhone's free," but when 2 years are up, then you have to pay for it. Right. That would be the most awful time to pay for an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
2 years into its life.
It's a piece of crap. You know? It's an old, broken.
Here's your bill. It's $650.
What? Well, anyway, I'm telling you, we're in a very interesting time. And that for me is, that's, you know, food for my soul. If you're a tech journalist, you got it. The next 6 months are going to be great. Great. And truthfully, if a lot of consumers don't want choice. That's why Apple does well. Choice scares them. But people
But I think they've taken it. They've taken it to a weird extreme. I mean, we don't want to talk about too much about Apple, but I mean, there are rumors that Apple's going to sell like a low end new phone and then a high end new phone, and I think that is a much better lack of choice than here's this piece of junk that we shipped 3 years ago that, by the way, never worked properly. We never actually fixed it. But here it is. You know, here it is. We're still selling it because we're really stubborn. And I guess you people buy them. So, yikes. You know, that's...
One of the things that Windows Phone is constrained on, it has to be a certain size, right?
What do you mean?
Well, you can't do a phablet. So I saw a picture... of a Nokia screen that was a 6-inch phone, right?
And under it's on the live side. Live side's got that picture.
Yeah, and the caption said, but it can't be a Windows phone yet because the Windows phone doesn't support that screen size. Is that right?
I think they did change the specs already. And now you can put the Windows phone operating system on I don't know the exact number of inches of screen, but you can put it on things that you couldn't put it on before. So
is there going to be, do you believe that life side picture?
Yeah.
I
believe that there will be phablets running Windows Phone.
Me too.
Yes.
Same.
Yeah. And I'm a converted believer. I love the Galaxy Note 2. I think it's fabulous with a PH. And I can't wait. Apparently HTC One there's going to be an HTC One phablet. So excited about that.
Yeah.
There's also a rumored follow-on to the HTC 8X coming this year, too. That's like the HTC One, supposedly, but a Windows phone.
Does this pose a problem for developers at all? I mean, is it difficult to handle these different screen sizes?
No, it's not screen size, right? It's resolution.
That's what I mean, resolution. Problem. Yeah.
No, I mean, most of it's fairly automatic. In fact, it's so kind of fairly automatic that I don't understand why they even went with three hard-coded resolutions. I suspect by Windows Phone 8.1 that what you're going to see is it's just whatever resolution. Right. Like I think they'll
Android does this very
thing scales very well. It, yeah. It's always done that. I don't know why they have hard-coded it this way. It doesn't make sense to me. But
well, remember when Windows phones first came out, there was one kind. You could buy it from any manufacturer as long as it was, you know, the same.
Also, we got to think about the psychology of why they did that, because you got to remember that
it was a good move.
Well, no, before Windows Phone, there was Windows Mobile,
right?
And the Windows Mobile market was destroyed in a way, partially by the fact that the phone makers or the device makers could do whatever they wanted with
it.
They had 3-inch screens, 4-inch, they could do whatever they want. Crazy resolutions, they could go all over the map.
Right.
And supporting all of that stuff, all of that variances of hardware types with updates was next to impossible. And so it's ironic in a way, actually, if you think about it, in a bid to rein that in and make it easier to update the phone, they decided they would dictate a standard for all of the devices. And of course, then the carriers that prevented them from updating it anyway, so it didn't really matter. But I do believe that the system is very sophisticated, and certainly sophisticated enough to just handle what I would call resolution independence, and it won't matter. You can do 1080p, anything from 800 by 480 up to 1080p. It shouldn't matter. Should not matter.
You know what's going to be interesting, though, is as like phones get bigger in size, tablets come down in size, there's like this new middle, right? And then the question is, what as a device maker do you put on these things? Like, do you put the Windows Phone OS or do you put Windows? And do you have a choice?
See, that I don't think they have a choice.
I wonder how that's going to work, or if it's going to matter less because of the converging cores and the API set and the programming model and the UI. Maybe it will become more blurry.
Right. So over time, I think you're right. Yeah, it won't matter. Right. But today,
today it matters.
It has to be a phone.
It matters. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, that's that picture on LiveSide, which shows it like
my next phone will look like this. I'll be
pretty much like
a phone call. You know, on the giant.
And it has the three Windows buttons on the bottom, so it does look like it's a phone and not a tablet, right? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. It's like, okay, so that's going to be an interesting device if that comes to market. Or maybe that's just a picture of them doing like a reference sample or a test run.
Right.
We don't know. Is that definitely coming to market?
They make these. Doesn't mean they're going to sell them.
Exactly.
Right.
You got to bring them to Foxconn or whoever the partner is and say, can you manufacture this?
Yep.
Here's
it's funny. There's no evidence that phablets are taking over the market at all, beyond the fact that companies keep making them. Like, they're not actually the best-selling category
devices. I thought Galaxy Note was doing really well.
No, it's not that it's doing not doing well for what it is. It's just that if you compare that to, like, Galaxy S3, S4 sales, it's a tiny percentage.
But it's 5 million or something. I mean, it's not an insignificant number.
Well, I could tell you they're not going to sell 5 million Windows Phone phablets in the fall, but
it'd be celebration if they did.
Sure.
Three sets of updates to Windows 8.1. Does that indicate we're getting close?
I think it indicates that Windows 8.1 is really buggy.
Oh.
No. Ooh. I'm kidding. I actually have to say
this is pretty normal, isn't it? As you get
closer. That's why it's notable.
I mean,
how many weeks has it been since this thing shipped? It's been like a month, right?
Right.
It's just been
they shipped it
a month,
build, right?
So three times now they have shipped several updates at a time in kind of a bundle. And so if you go to Windows Update, you'll see, you know, depending on the day, 3 to 6 of these things. And some of them, it fixed, you know, pretty reasonable bugs that people have complained about. And I think in the past, they might have just fixed at the next milestone. Of course, in this case, the next milestone is the full release. So I think by doing this, it's a concession to that reality. But I think it's also a nice way for these guys to test what till now has been a theory, that they are able to operate on this rapid release cycle that they've been talking about so much. But really, up until the release of Windows 8.1 preview, the Windows Phone team has not really lived up to. But here they are. I mean, I thought these guys were kind of the laggards for a while there, but I have to say they've been doing a pretty good job on this stuff. I'd like to see app updates, you know, like Metro app updates more frequently, but it's pretty good.
They've done those as well, haven't they?
Not since the 8.1 preview.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Gosh, a whole month ago.
Didn't they do an Xbox one?
It's been a whole month.
Yeah,
I thought
maybe
they did an Xbox Music.
Yeah.
But I think what we're seeing is just the whole new model, right? Now that they're rolling out Windows every year, they're going to start having to patch it like nonstop pretty much, right? Even when it's a preview, they're going to have to patch that nonstop too, because they're just on this much, much more rapid release cadence. So I think this is the new normal now. We're just, even if this was less buggy, I think you're just going to start seeing this now. Every month at least, if not more frequent, you're going to see that.
And they have that thing set up. You know, they already have like this notion of Patch Tuesday, right? Where every month they deliver whatever set of security updates. I mean, you could make an argument that they're kind of already set up to deliver these regular updates and that provides them with the model that they need. But I mean, three sets, I mean, I don't know how many it's been exactly, but I think on Windows 8, it's been something close to 10 or 11 updates. You know, one was for a pretty big scrolling bug that a lot of people were complaining about. Nice. You know, it's just nice to see that. I mean, because these guys, you know, in the past, they were like it was like Groundhog Day. They would pop the little head out of the hole and once a year, and then you wouldn't hear from them for a while, you know, and this is a nice change.
We're going to take a break.
I can't wait till Apple copies them. And then
Apple has, you know, those of us who use iOS see updates, you know, they just kind of come in all the time willy nilly. It's rare that I turn on my iPad or iPhone and don't have 15 updates to do to my apps.
Well, and that makes sense. But
apps are updating all the time.
Android, I would argue, is even worse in that regard. I don't use my Android.
I'm sure it is, but it does it automatically, so I don't see it. But yeah, no, every day.
Well, but you see them in the. It's kind of funny. You don't have to do them, but you get this notification list, and it's like 27 items were updated. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. You know, no, there. It's I would say five apps are updated daily.
Right.
In my case, but I have a lot of apps. You know, I have probably an abnormal number of apps because of what I do. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Carbonite Online Backup. If you've got data, you got to back it up. Carbonite lets you do it automatically, continuously. You don't have to think about it. Whenever you're online, Carbonite is backing up. And, you know, it's so important if you're a business. One thing to talk about backup for individuals, because, you know, if you think about what's in your hard drive, financial records or baby pictures, wedding photos, that kind of thing, that's important. But if you're a business, it's life or death. If you haven't been backing up your systems and there's a fire in your business, burns down, it happens. I know you don't want to think about it, but that's what backing up is. It's disaster planning. And you lose the hard drives, you lose the backups. How long is it going to take you to start that business back up? Where is your accounts receivable? Who are your suppliers? Who are your customers? Carbonite Online Backup is really great. You don't have to assign an employee to back it up and trust them. You don't have to remember to do it yourself. Automatically, Carbonite will back up all your computers, servers, external hard drives, always for one low flat annual fee. Carbonite Online Backup for a PC or Mac, a single computer, starts at $59.99 a year for everything on that computer. That's less than $5 a month. And after a disaster, it's easy to restore. You're also able to see your stuff anytime with the Carbonite free apps on the mobile platforms, iPhone, Android. It's just really you can even email a file from the Carbonite app, which is really cool. We had a guy in here. He said, I had pictures with last time I was in the studio. Let me see if I can get them. Oh, they're on my home computer. Oh, wait a minute. I use Carbonite. And he was able to go get it, download it, show it to me. You can start a free trial today for 2 weeks. Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card, just our offer code Windows for Windows Weekly. Carbonite.com. You can even use it for a Mac if you want, but the offer code is Windows. Carbonite.com, offer code Windows. And by the way, when you do the free trial using our offer code, you'll get 14 months when you buy, 2 months free at Carbonite.com. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly. We're talking about the latest from Microsoft, i.e., wait for it, 11. It goes to 11.
It does. And as of today, IE 11 preview is on Windows 7 and not just part of Windows 8.1 preview.
Oh, good.
Yes. So that's a good thing.
It's Microsoft. And I think Microsoft's the last browser to keep track of version numbers. Because like Chrome, they're at 28
it's
or
just
something.
Chrome. Yeah.
And Firefox, I don't even know. I mean, it's just like boom, boom, boom. Yeah. I guess Safari, they pay attention.
It's quaint.
Yes. Yes, it is. What number, what version are you using? 11.
I think we kind of need it, though, right? Because different versions of Windows run different versions of IE, and they can't run some. Right. Some can't run others, right? Like, example, Windows 8 cannot run IE 11. Windows 8.1 can. And now Windows 7 can. But
wait a minute. Windows 8 can't, but Windows 7 can?
No. Correct.
Weird.
Wait, weird. What's that?
What?
Yep. You cannot put even Paul's IE baffled. 11 on Windows 8. I asked this twice today.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right.
Like as a standalone install.
It doesn't do that. Yeah. Can't go on there. Yeah. And the Microsoft thinking is everybody who has 8 is going to go to 8.1, so you're going to get it that way, right? But there are some people right now running Windows 8 who don't want to run the Windows 8.1 preview who wish they could put the IE 11 preview on Windows 8, but you cannot.
Somebody in the chat room said that that IE 11 user agent string reports itself as IE 11, which breaks some websites. That's a stupid website that says. are you greater than or less, greater than or equal to?
Yeah.
Or less than
that's
or equal to 10.
That's the way we used to check versions back in 1996.
Yeah, but that's a stupid website. Sure. You're less than or equal to 9, well, you can use us.
Right. But yeah, so IE 11, you know, people who've been running the preview already know a lot about it. It is like faster, supposedly, and more performant, one of Microsoft's favorite words.
More secure.
More secure. But it does also support WebGL, which is a good thing.
I like WebGL.
Yep. And the version on Windows 7 is slightly different from the version that's on Windows 8.1. For example, the version on Windows 8.1 can support up to 100 tabs open per window, and the one on Windows 7 cannot. There's a few other kind of one-off things like that, like no premium video extensions on Windows 7 because you have Flash and Silverlight there, and on Windows 8.1, you have the premium video extensions. So, I mean, built right into the browser. So, yeah, there's like a couple little differences, but mostly they're quite similar. And if you do run IE 11 on Windows 7, you're going to just have a supposedly a much faster, more standards compliant, better experience.
A jolly old time.
Exactly. And so the other thing Microsoft did today, too, alongside the delivering the preview, they also updated their modern.ie site, which is where they get people to try to test browsers against, test their various setups and websites against the IE 11 code. And that way you can see, does your site work? What do you have to do to fix it? What's going to make it a better experience? So you can actually go to the modern IE site and to entice you to go there, they have all kinds of freebies and offers. Like you can get Parallels desktop for 25% off if you're one of the first people who go and take advantage of the offer. So yeah, it's a good thing. If you're somebody who builds apps and websites, you should probably check in on that site.
Just to see.
Just to see. Just to make sure.
But don't do it on Windows 8 because you can't use it on Windows 8. It's not welcome.
Well, you can. You just have to get Windows 8.1.
8.1.
Right. I know. It sounds weird to say it that way. I mean, Windows, like Paul says this all the time. He's like, Windows 8.1 is an update to Windows 8. It is. But it also, in some ways, is also a new version of Windows, right? So I think it's hard to kind of get your head around that at first.
I don't appreciate the implicit complaint that Microsoft doesn't name things correctly here because, let's face it, it's so obvious.
It never happens,
no,
right?
No,
never
it's great. This whole thing is, I hate this Windows 8.1 thing. I hate it. The name of it, I mean. Like, I really do wish they had thought of something smarter than this. It's really dumb. It's really dumb.
Because you think people just are confused if it's a new version or why.
Yeah. It's too confusing.
Yeah. So it's just been 8.0 Service Pack 1.
Feature Pack 1. Anything. R2.
Right.
R2, no.
You know, whatever.
R3.
I mean, it's so dumb.
I think we'll get used to it over time.
I was really thrilled today. I saw the story that all Xbox Ones are developer machines. Is that right?
Well. Is it right?
Well.
Let Mary Jo tackle this one. Okay. She loves the Xbox so much.
You're going to let me tackle this one. Okay, here we go. Xbox One. Okay. Actually, I am interested. This is the part of Xbox One I am interested in is the OS and the developer platform, right?
Right.
So up till now, Microsoft's been just not commenting when people have said, what's the indie gaming story on Xbox One? And so by not commenting, everyone was assuming the worst, that there wasn't going to be one, or that it was going to be exactly like it is on Xbox 360, where you have to pay a lot of money and align yourself with a publisher and go through a lengthy certification process. And this week, Microsoft decided to kind of let a little bit of the cat out of the bag, or maybe half the cat is out of the bag now. They said, yes, there is going to be an indie gaming publishing story for Xbox One. We're going to talk about it next month at GamersCom. Is that the name of the show? I think. And so they haven't told us all the details yet. Like, what does it really mean you're going to have an indie gaming story? But VentureBeat's been kind of ticking away at this, and they got them to say it's, you know, right when Xbox One comes out later this year, it's not going to automatically have all these indie games lined up. We don't know what it means from a tools standpoint, really. We don't know what you're going to have to pay, how your games are going to be certified, or how they're going to display. We don't know any of that. But supposedly, you can use your Xbox One to develop games if you're an indie gaming publisher. And I think that the tooling story is going to be super interesting here because, you know, they've backed away basically from XNA as their story, and they're using more third-party frameworks now like Unity and other kind of gaming frameworks as the way they're suggesting developers build games for their platform. Next month could be very interesting. And I think it marks a very interesting kind of change of tone, at least. We don't know if it's going to be another 180 change at Microsoft, but at least it seems like they're listening. And I don't know if Don Matrick's departure had anything to do with this, if he was kind of like the one saying, no, we got to do it the way we've been doing it all along or not. But yeah, we'll see next month. Good news. Good news. I think it is good news. Yeah.
And speaking of Unity, if you write it in Unity, then it'll work on a Nexus 7 as well.
Huzzah!
I had to think through that one.
Like, yeah, I know.
Why would that be desirable?
No. Yesterday they showed a Unity game running on Nexus 7.
Sure.
Speaking of which, we just got our Chromecast.
You did.
The dongle has arrived. Yeah, young Chad was smart enough to check Amazon and got it overnighted from Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do an unboxing right after the show, right before iPad Today. We'll take a look at the little Chromecast dongle. What do you think?
I don't care too much about Chromecast. I'm more interested in that Nexus 7. We'll talk about it in a moment. But clearly Google, like everyone else, and I honestly, Apple and Microsoft fit into this category too. They're all sort of stumbling around trying to figure out the living room, you know, and something that works. This is Google's third attempt, basically, at the living room.
And they say they're not killing Google TV, that they're this is... Yeah.
They're really stubborn about Google TV.
They are, yeah. I don't know. I'm excited about this because I think, well, for Twit and other independent content or creators, this is great because it's an open SDK, open API, so we can modify our apps. You can fire up our app on Android, our iPhone, or Windows Phone. Well, I don't know about Windows Phone, but on Android or iPhone, and push a. I don't think there's an API for Windows Phone. Come to think of it. But push a button and it'll send it to your big screen TV and you can watch it.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We don't know. But that seems
to be the thing. Like I sounds great. We'll see.
Yeah.
If it did that would be unique, wouldn't it? It's not.
I wouldn't say it's unique. I would say it's another way of doing it. Every platform has some way of doing what
it's
you just described.
Great for me. I'll tell you why. Because I don't want to have to write individual apps for each smart TV. We had to write an app for the Roku. We are not allowed to stream live on Apple TV because Apple decides no. So what this is an open platform for us. And at $35, I think they're going to get some significant penetration. And so it's very significant for an independent internet broadcaster like me. It's huge.
Yeah. I get that.
I don't know from an end user's point of view, it's just another way to get Netflix, I guess. Yeah. Cheapest way I could think of to get Netflix, unless your TV came with us. Although the smart TV software is universally god awful.
Yeah. I would say the Roku, Apple TV, or Xbox UIs for Netflix are approximately 100 times better.
PlayStation and Xbox as well.
Yeah.
Although the Xbox, you have to pay for the, gold, which is annoying.
But we're Xbox users. We love paying for things, Leo. It's Well, it's like the it's
my,
like being
my
an Apple
rationale.
Customer,
you know, my rationale like, is I'm paying for it anyway, so I get it anyway. Sure. But it is a little strange that you have to pay again for a service you're already paying for. I'll never understand that.
I agree with that more than I do. Yeah.
It just baffles me.
Yep. I thought, you know, and watching the coverage of Chromecast yesterday, I was surprised. I think I only saw one reporter talk about smart glass when they were talking about this. And in some ways, this has a lot to do with smart glass, right? I mean, it's the idea is your phone or your tablet become your remote, and that's kind of what smart glass is, right? I mean, it's not doing exactly the same thing as the dongle, obviously, but it's giving you a lot of those.
Well, let me ask you, because I don't, and I think I, like other trade press, probably doesn't know enough about smart glass to include it in our stories. But let me ask you. Okay, so I have a Windows RT, or you know, I have a Surface, and is a smart glass app? Is that how it works?
Yep.
And then I launch the app, and I say, "Oh, good! I'd really like to see this show on the web. Can I then send it to my? I send it to my TV, right?"
You don't send it to your TV. You send it to your Xbox.
You send a command to the Xbox, which then it sounds like it does the same thing as the Google dongle does. It then on its own gets the data and puts it on the screen.
Depends on what. This is a rabbit hole, Leo. Microsoft. You know, so there are so many different ways to do this. But you know, Smart Glass is designed for like official content that's in the store kind of stuff. I mean, it's you know, you have to be either an Xbox app or a partner app or game. You know, to actually have their games that will do this. They have other facilities for pushing your own content to the TV through the Xbox. You know, Play on Xbox is a feature of Xbox Video, for example, where if it's, you know, maybe you've ripped your own DVD or whatever, you want to push that content from the, you know, to the, from the device to the screen. There's differences in the technology. There's differences in the way that the content is delivered, because sometimes it's streaming from the tablet or whatever you have to the Xbox. Sometimes the Xbox actually is handling the back end work to deliver that content to your TV over the internet. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. It's kind of hard to say. I mean, they just announced this, so I'll need to look at it before I can compare this very accurately. But yeah, the way I would put this is Google's version of Smart Glass. That's absolutely accurate. And it's Google's version of AirPlay as well. Yeah. Also accurate.
Okay. Very different. It's not.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean that from a technological sense.
From a functional point of view.
From a functional. I want to be very clear about that, because the
AirPlay is mirroring what's on your device.
Right, but
and
which the Chromecast
can do, but that's not the most.
No, it's very general use. The point is, you walk into a room with a phone or a tablet or a computer, and you say, "Oh, I've got this YouTube video or whatever it is that I want to watch it over there on the big screen."
Right.
All of these companies have some way to do that, or to do something like that, and that these are the three technologies. Not the three. These are three technologies or whatever to do that.
Okay,
if that makes sense.
I think it's huge, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Did you get one?
Google has never done anything.
I ordered five. Now, admittedly, there's a lot of question marks, because until you have one, you're not sure what it's capable of or what it looks like and so forth. But at $35, I could enable. Yeah. I could put one on every TV I've got and in here, and you know. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, we'll just have to see if what the capabilities are and whether it's as good. And by the way, it's $35 and it extends your Netflix subscription by 3 months. So it's $11 if you're a Netflix subscriber. Hmm. So that's a pretty compelling price point.
A Roku at $45 is a compelling price point too. I mean, or whatever it is, the cheap one. I mean,
most people buy the $100 one. So
I know
that's what they're paying.
Well, but that suggests that maybe there isn't a huge market for these things. I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
No, there's not. You're right. I mean, if you look at the total sales for these devices, it's small. It's fraction. It's minuscule.
Well, but this is what I mean earlier. So what I meant earlier, you know, these companies all see their living room as the open possibility that it is.
Right.
They've all tried different things. You know, Roku has sold, I think, 5 or 6 million devices. Apple sold 10 to 12.
Yeah, I think the total 15. Is, you know, if you include everything, it's probably around 20 million. And most people have smart TVs never use the smart TV.
Nope, don't even know it's there. Don't care.
Nope.
Yep. All you got to do is use it once to know to ignore it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's the end of that. So the possibility is absolutely still there. It's just that it's never – someone's going to hit on it. It's like the golden ticket. This is the – this is the one, you know, when people talk about Apple and how they don't have another big product, if they got this right, or if any of these other companies got it right, this is the next big, this is the next billion-dollar market. I mean, it's crazy that no one has really succeeded in a huge way in the living room yet.
Well, we'll see. This is a very very aggressive play, mostly because of the price point. But I think you're right. I think most people left their VCRs at blinking 12. It's just not something people...
that's interesting.
I have to plug something
in? True.
No. Right.
Yep.
How about the Nexus 7? You said you wanted to talk about that a little bit, briefly?
Yeah, I mean, I watched that replay. I watched the YouTube video of the event, and I took notes. And, I have a Nexus 7 that I never use, the current version. But people talk very highly about it that I know. And I'm interested in it. I looked at the specs, and I looked at what's in the market today. And obviously, it's a kind of a jump up. But I think the thing that struck me the most, it wasn't until I got to the end of this discussion, which was the price of this thing is kind of amazing when you compare it to what's out there. They undercut the iPad mini by $100 to $150, actually to $100 to $200, depending on the model, which is astonishing for devices that are already pretty low cost. And they provide, the Retina class display, which is amazing, huge pixel count, quad-core processing, more RAM, NFC, wireless charging, all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is, on paper, I think an interesting thing to look at. I'm not personally a huge fan of Android, although...
I think Android, we're going to call you back here first, because again, it's the audio thing is happening.
Okay.
I think that Android has caught up in the tablet space, even in the year since the first Nexus 7 came up. It's considerably better in a tablet. And boy, it really puts a lie to Apple saying, or at least seeming to say, oh, we can't make a mini with a Retina display. Oh, we can't make a mini at that price point with a Retina display and good battery life. Because in a way, Google just said, oh, really? Well, here's a Retina 7-inch tablet, 10-hour battery life for $229. Now what do you say?
So that's the thing. Apple will come out with a Retina iPad, but is it going to cost $229?
Right.
I don't think so.
Well, and the rumors are strong, and of course nobody knows what Apple's going to do in the fall, but the rumors are strong that there will be no mini update this year. That will be next year. Mm-hmm. Now the pressure is on.
Right. I'm curious, what's Microsoft going to do, right? Because they're supposed to do the mini Surface this year, right?
I have to say that at this point, when people call me and say, what tablet should I get, it's a no-brainer. They should get a Nexus.
Yeah, it
looks don't you think? Way. You shouldn't get an iPad. It's
well, by
much.
The way, so there's only one Windows Mini tablet, right?
Right.
It's pretty terrible.
Not that one. Not that one.
I mean, no, but you can't even compare these things. It's so awful.
I know.
I just did a speed test on my connection, by the way, and it's fantastic. So I don't know.
It might be a hardware issue. What are you? Yeah, because your picture's fine. It never degrades.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry.
You're good now, though.
Skype hates me today.
Every time I call you back, it gets better, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Download speed here is like 55 megabits, and upload is 23.
Yeah, no, it's not the bandwidth. It's some strange thing. Mm-hmm. We love you anyway.
Okay. So that's my cyborg future.
So what I was saying when you were gone is just what you heard, which is this is challenging for Apple.
Yeah.
And I think the Android tablet experience, I agree with you, wasn't very good a year ago. I think it's fine now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, when I use my Nexus 7, somebody sent me a note saying, well, if you make music, there's nothing like the iPad. Well, that's true.
That's awesome.
There are
well,
niches.
Well, if you speak Swahili, Leo.
Yeah, there are niches. And you know what? If you want Google Now, you got to get an Android device. There are niches in every platform. But
By the way, in the 1980s, that conversation would have said, if you make music, Leo,
you need
there's
Mac.
Nothing like the Atari SD. I'm
oh,
just
yeah.
saying.
Yeah, the Amiga.
There's nothing like it. It comes with a mini
Amiga.
Port built right in. Crazy.
Anyway, I think this is a it got underplayed because it had leaked.
Yeah. And
I didn't think much of it until I went through the presentation, and I was like, actually, this is a pretty impressive value. I mean, I don't like Android.
I was curious. Why do you think they didn't give it a different name? Like, why did they call it Nexus 7?
It's funny. Apple's new iPad is the new iPad, right?
I know.
Apple
and
stopped doing that. I don't know why.
Because they do that with Chrome, too.
Yeah. Because when I think, you know, we know that there's going to be a refresh of Surface RT and Surface Pro this year. That's in their fiscal year. And I'm curious if they'll just call it the Surface RT and the Surface Pro. And
that is my expectation as well. Yep. So actually, I posted my preview of the Nexus 7. And as soon as I hit send, I was like, wait a second. I've already written articles about the old Nexus 7. Like, how are we going to know which one is this? And so I kind of called it back and I changed it to say 2013 in parentheses after the name because, you know, oftentimes when products come out and they just have the same name, you have to note it in some way. And so that's the way. I'll just refer to this as like the 2013 edition or the second generation or whatever. So I need to, you know, like everything else in life, I need to see one. But, you know, the hardware looks solid and there's some interesting improvements in Android, which, by the way, is maturing at a rapid rate. So they have this notion of parental controls in Android 4.2. And now in 4.3, multi-user. And now in 4.3, you can restrict the other accounts a la parental controls and say that, you know, little Susie's account here can't play games that are rated over this amount or can play these exact games only. And that becomes a much more valuable device. And you can do something like that without the complexity of a system like Windows or Mac OS X, which may also offer similar features, you know. Smart. So multi-user. I mean, multi-user that's sophisticated. Yeah. It's still Android, but, you know, whatever. I mean, they're getting there. That's the point. I mean, they're improving.
Yeah. I don't know why you hate Android so much.
They're so cute.
Why do you hate Android so much? Doesn't your wife use Android?
Yeah, but I hate my wife. I'm just kidding. I don't hate Android. I am kind of ambivalent about Android. Like, in other words, I feel like I should be more excited about it than I am, but every time I look at it, it's like, eh. You know, like
I love it.
I get it. I mean, I understand how it works. I just don't really care.
To me, it is so exciting. And by the way, I'll explain that. And I'll explain the naming thing is that Google has these this Nexus brand is an important brand for Google. What it's saying is this is the Google experience in 4 inches, in 7 inches, and 10 inches. And there's actually the Nexus 4 and the Nexus 7 are very similar products. It's just different screen sizes. So I think that's the point of the naming is whatever you get, if you get the current Nexus, you're getting the current Google experience in 4, 7, or 10. And there'll be, by the way, a Nexus 10 imminently. I believe Samsung said that.
Yeah. I never got a Nexus 10. I have a 4 and a 7. I ignore them, Leo, because I hate it so much. But I just let them sit there and discharge their stupid batteries. No, I just don't. I don't know. I just don't.
Somebody said, the Ford Mustang. They don't say Mustang 2. It's the Mustang.
No, but they do say 2013.
They say the 2013 Mustang. No, you're right, yeah. And I guess you could say the 2013 Nexus 7 if you needed to distinguish it.
Well, there'll be some model number that is buried somewhere on a product page that you will identify this thing succinctly. I mean, there is some name for it. I mean,
Nexus 7 Carlos Danger model, I think.
Yes.
They're going to call.
Yeah.
Microsoft earnings, you want to talk any more about that? It happened right at the end of the show last week.
It did.
So all we could do is just give you the results. Of course, the
we
big
just had that
the
deer
big
in
shocker,
the headlamp effect.
Yeah, the 900 completely unexpected $900 million charge for Surface RT.
There's a discussion that needs to occur around this, but Mary Jo's got something we should get it to first, I guess.
Yeah. So what I wanted to say about the Surface RT write down is, you know, it's been funny to watch the interpretation of this and people's just kind of back of the napkin math being accepted as fact on this. Obviously, they made too many Surface RTs, but we don't know how many they made. We don't know how many they sold. And the 6 million figure is just a couple of different bloggers kind of trying to figure this out. And Microsoft's never said they're sitting on an unsold inventory of 6 million Surface RTs. I've asked around, and I think that number is smaller. And I also think part of the reason, although no one has said this to me either, but part of the reason they did this write down at this magnitude is they know when they come out with the next Surface RT that they're going to have to slash prices on whatever's left in inventory. And they only wanted to do this one time, right? They don't want to have to do a write down and next quarter do another write down. So this is like the mega write down of everything that's going to happen until the Surface RT refresh or the next Surface RT shows up. So I'm not saying it's good news. I'm not trying to say Microsoft did a great job. I'm just still really curious. Like, there obviously their supply chain planning process needed a lot of help that it didn't get at the beginning. And, you know, they made two, it seems like they made way too many Surface RTs. They made too few Surface Pros. Remember all those shortages of Surface Pros when that first came out in February. So I think we have to take with a grain of salt that it's like, yeah, they're sitting on 6 million unsold Surface RTs and they're not going to sell any more.
I hope they're in the back of a giant dump truck that they can easily drive to the Arizona desert or whatever and
put somewhere.
You know, putting a hole in the ground or whatever.
Yeah, that 6 million, I'm sorry, that 900 million figure also included accessories and parts as well.
Right.
It just wasn't, it's not like they have all these Surface RTs somewhere like in a truck or in a vault.
I hope someone's office in the Microsoft campus, like they have built like a little fort out of Surface RT boxes, you know.
They probably
have. Nobody wants.
I know, right? No, they're still selling Surface RTs. And, you know, maybe $350 is the right price, the price they should have had at the beginning,
many
people would argue, instead of a lot more than that. And, you know, maybe they're going to throw the touch cover or type cover in to keep selling these. But they're really pushing these hard in the academic market. The academic market seems to be buying quite a few of them because they did that back to not a back to school, but like an offer for educational institutions to buy these at a quite a discount, I believe, and in volume. And they seem to be doing pretty well with that. So, you know, I think it's just the easy explanation is they made too many. They're sitting on a stockpile of 6 million and they're going to dump them into the ocean. It's way more complicated than that. Let's just say that.
No, yes. And even a friend of mine who knows nothing about technology caught some news story and we were talking about Surfaces and he said, you don't mean that, you know, that piece of junk that they're trying to get rid of. And I said, John, that's not what's happening. You know, and it is amazing how many people have misunderstood this. It's like this $900 write down as if, you know, this is like the last thing you do before you cast off the product line.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't want to say that, like, I wish they would, but I they're not doing that. I mean, they're continuing with this.
They are.
And I think that's the thing that most people are misunderstanding.
How do you know that? Have they said that?
Well, they've already, I mean, they've revealed a second gen is coming. I mean, you don't do this kind of platform work to get rid of the platform. It's an important part of the underlying part of Windows 8. I mean, this is, it's they're not going to get rid of
it. So it's not a separate.
No, it's Windows 8. It is Windows 8. Windows RT is just another SKU of Windows 8, essentially. I mean, it's a. You know, one that runs on different hardware. I mean,
they've killed SKUs before, though. If it's only a SKU,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, it does run on a different platform.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the thing is, I saw a lot of people tweeting this when earnings were happening. They're like, "What if it's like the Zune?" Right. So Microsoft kept the Zune alive for three generations. They kept saying it's strategic. We need it. Four generations. When they finally get it right with the Zune HD, they killed it after that. So, you know, a lot of people are worried.
That's true, but, you know, and Zune is not exactly central to Microsoft's business, whereas, I don't know, a mobile device is, and one that is Windows. You know, it's Windows. This is Windows.
It is. The question is what is the positioning of an RT-based device as Haswell and the new Atom chips come out? Like, what's its differentiation from that platform? And is it worth having
I think
a
they've
platform?
Screwed up everything with RT.
They kind of have, right? I know. Because
this
I think
is the one
the
they give away Office on, and it's the one that shouldn't have Office. It's the one that should be on small tablets. It should be competing with the Nexus 7. It should be the one that you play games on.
What would Microsoft lose if they just said, we're not going to make any more RT?
What would they lose?
Besides reputation.
Well, the problem here is that there's two sides to this. It's the hardware and the software. And, you know, a lot of people like myself, if you want to look at it kind of cynically, you could say, well, the reason they did RT was to prod Intel to get more aggressive in the mobile space. And that, you know, Intel was also one of the companies that released their earnings recently where they're struggling with mobile. You know, this is kind of a theme this spring, it seems. They're not doing a good job in that space. You know, if that goes away, I mean, you know, you get into a weird position where
the reason RT exists is to put pressure on Intel.
I think that's probably why it did at the beginning. But now, you know, if you believe their positioning, I should say, and listen to what they're saying,
I should point out, it puts no pressure on Intel if it doesn't sell. quite the opposite.
Right. Right. And
Yes.
What they're saying now, which is very interesting, is they're saying RT is our iPad competitor and Windows 8-based tablets are PCs. That is very different from what they've been saying up till now. They've always kind of said RT was an iPad competitor, at least on the price front. But the problem is, like Paul just said, they put Office on there. And, you know, some people want Office on there and they want Outlook on there. I'm one of those people. But, you know, maybe the strategy going forward is RT the positioning of RT is it's a consumption device, and maybe that's not going to be as big a deal. I don't know.
You
know?
I think it needs to be the consumption device. I guess I would just say it this way, Mary Jo. Imagine if Surface RT came out last year and it was running a Clover Trail Atom instead in exactly the same form factor, exactly the same fanless performance, exactly the same battery life. It still shipped with Office and Outlook. But if you wanted to, you could install Chrome, you could install iTunes, you could install Photoshop. I mean, imagine if that's what Surface RT was. That device at that size, that would have made more sense. And I think that keeping the productivity stuff on like the Windows, traditional Windows side of the fence, x86 side of the fence makes more sense. I think that the future of RT is going to be a merging with Windows Phone, and it becomes a pure tablet play. Whether it's a phablet, mini tablet, and maybe they should stop there. It should be the mini devices. I mean, and it should be entertainment and consumption and
That's what they'll do, right? Maybe the mini Surface we've heard about is an RT device.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it would be that pure Metro experience without the desktop and without any of that stupidity that you have to put into a tablet to have the full Windows going on there. That this system can become smaller, lighter, and simpler, and more secure, and all of that good stuff that you get from...
You kind of have a problem. If you're selling a consumption device, you're going up against two companies who don't need to make money on the device.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Google and
right.
Amazon.
No, but the majesty, the thing is...
are going to undercut you every single time.
No, you're
time.
Right. By the way, that's the thing. When you look at mini tablets like the Acer today, which is a Clover Trail-based system, even if that thing had like a perfect screen... Well, actually, if it had a perfect screen, it might have a different value prop, but... You know, even today, though, if you're speaking honestly about these devices, you know, the Nexus 7, even as it was before they updated it with that ecosystem backing, the iPad mini, even though it's a little more expensive than the Nexus 7, has a tremendous ecosystem backing, are in fact better pure consumption devices. There's no doubt about it. But there's something to be said for that notion of a companion device, that you have this, I use a Surface Pro to get work done, and I can use this mini Surface RT device, and it has the same Tile UI, and I'm familiar with that, and I can share apps and games and things between the two devices if I want to, that there are advantages there as well. And it's designed to be part of a family of products where you have a Windows Phone that it maybe over time can also share some of those things, but today can share certainly in the content. The music content anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, Steven Sandoff, who's listening to the show, just said maybe the RT devices should be their Chromebook competitors. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't understand Chromebook either, but...
I know,
but at least it's cheap. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, like a cheap...
Yeah,
you know,
right. I have a device. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they needed to make an $1,800 version
that's
of the
it?
Surface RT.
There's a market for the high end.
Maybe.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about before we get to our tips and picks and code names and all that?
I want to say one more thing because this came up in stories this week. I think it came out from the International Herald Tribune, Bill Gates coming back. The rumor is back again this week.
Ugh.
Every time Microsoft has an earnings dip or issue, it's like, bring Bill Gates back. And let's just say here and now.
Which shows a serious lack of insight, by the way.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Okay? No, people. That rumor is just completely made up. There's no founding for it. If you heard it from wherever, Wall Street or...
Yeah, never coming
wherever.
Back.
Not happening.
Ever,
not happening.
Ever, never, ever.
No, there we go.
Never, ever coming back. That's like saying Windows 3.1 is going to come back. Ain't gonna happen.
That would run great on Windows RT, though.
That's nostalgia. Nostalgia. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Audible.com, the greatest audiobook store in the world. Audible is 100,000 volumes strong, not just books, but all sorts of stuff. Comedy performances, radio plays, audio of all kinds, although the books really are the reason I go to Audible. It's kind of my favorite bookstore. I love browsing around, reading stuff for young adults and children. Great stories as well. Have you been watching the Netflix series Orange is the New Black? There is an Audible version of the book that inspired it by Piper Kerman. It's a true story. Wow. About a middle-class woman who was sentenced to a crime she committed 10 years for a crime she committed 10 years ago to prison. And, boy, I'm going to read it because I love the Netflix series. What are you reading today, Paul? What is your...
So I've started listening to shorter Stephen King stories. Definitely. I went through I listened to Joyland, which is the new one, that kind of pulp crime novel thing, which is, by the way, is excellent. But it occurred to me, you know, if I walked like 45 minutes to an hour every day, like how long would it take me to get through something like The Stand, right?
Yeah.
It would take me 6 months, yeah. You know, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it takes them like
forever.
So I thought, you know, I mean, I was like, well, I wonder what's in there. Like, is there stuff I could listen to more quickly? And actually, Stephen King has a lot of really good short form things. And the one I'm listening to now is called Stationary Bike. And as I'm listening to this particular one, I realize I must have read this in a short story collection somewhere. But I've purchased a bunch of Stephen King short stories or short story collections, where the individual stories are anywhere from, you know, 55 minutes to possibly two and a half hours, that kind of thing. They're just kind of like nice little bite-sized type things, where in one case I was even able to listen to an entire book just on a walk, you know, 55 minutes or whatever. There's a lot of cool stuff like that. I mean, I'm trying to...
They have
when
a
I first
ton
started,
of Stephen King on here. Holy cow.
Yeah, there's a ton of Stephen King.
128 results.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find things that are, you know... Books like I read Under the Dome, right? So I'm not going to listen to that one on Audible, but I'm trying to branch out into, you know, to new stuff. And I was surprised, I read basically everything he writes, I thought, but there's some stuff that I have not heard or listened to or read or whatever. And like Joyland, for example, is one where that came out in paperback form. That's how that publisher works. So that particular book is not available in like Kindle format. But it is available on Audible. And so that's a great one as well.
You know, I read The Stand when it came out in a very, very, very thick paperback. And I just recently completed the audiobook of it. And it's almost a different experience.
That must have taken forever.
Yeah.
Oh, The Stand? I mean, seriously.
The Stand was really long. 47 hours and 52 minutes.
Yeah. Aww. I mean, the newer version of that is something like 1,100 pages long.
It starts out saying... When I first published The Stand, my editor told me to take out about, you know, 400 pages. I've put all those pages back for this edition. It's like, oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? The Stand is one of those books that's so good,
it's
you don't
great.
Want it to end.
You don't want it to end.
Yeah.
So let me tell you, here's a way to get a free book. Go to audible.com/windows. We know a lot of people say, I don't know. I don't know if audiobooks, will I have to rewind a lot? Will I be able to pay attention? And I think you'll be surprised. No, seriously.
You
got to try it. And, you know, maybe it isn't for you, but that's why we got the free book deal, so that you can see if it is. But I would suggest picking a book that you're excited about, that you're going to enjoy. I think fiction's a good way to start. I read a lot of nonfiction histories, as does Paul. You're reading The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich still, right?
Yeah.
You will be for the rest of your life, I think.
45% of the way through. By the way, Leo, let me.
No,
let me
no, no spoilers! Spoiler no spoilers!
Spoiler! They just invaded Poland, Leo.
Oh,
yeah.
So you're actually now at the beginning of the war, halfway through.
Yep. There's the rise and the fall. I'm at the part in the middle.
Middle.
It's not a rise or a fall.
The plateau.
Yeah.
Wow. Give it a try. Audible.com/windows. What you'll be doing is signing up the gold account. That's a book a month. Pay nothing for the first 30 days. You can get a book for that. You listen to it. If you don't like it, just cancel. The book is yours to keep. But I think you'll want to stick around. It is the best audio bookstore ever, and I'm a big fan. Paul is. We live by Audible. Audible.com/windows. We thank them for their support. Now, Paul Theroux has our tip of the week.
Yeah. And the tip of the week is you need to help me.
Help me!
Yeah, I finished what I call the first draft of the Windows Phone book, which I, if you recall, I think I said last August that I was going to write it, and I started writing it in September, but then I took a couple of months off to work on an Xbox Music book and whatever. It's been a long time, but so I've shipped a first draft and then an update to the first draft. But
oh my god, you can download the PDF, 626 pages.
Yeah.
Holy it's, cow. Yeah,
640 something.
Oh, it
with
got longer.
The table of contents. Well, that's just it's
getting longer.
It's fake longer.
Okay. So anyway, you're giving this to people for free.
Yeah, it's a gift. I'm going through it, and I'm fixing screenshots, fixing errors, and adding little things. And I'm putting in all of the like cross references, so you can click on a link and have it go to the right place in the book and all that stuff.
Are you going to publish this online eventually, or is this an ebook? Are you going to go to your regular publisher?
Only. I will publish it on Kindle at least, and
not through your publisher.
No, jeez, I swear to God, every phone in my house
is
that
unbelievable. An Amber Alert?
I got like three of those the other day.
I know,
not Amber Alerts, severe weather alerts. That's another thing. It's like the loud. You have to address it. You get like the severe weather alert.
Yeah,
it's This one says, I swear to God, it says, "Hi, guys. Hope your summer is going well. I'm going to be getting rid of my phone number at the end of the month. My new number is whatever it is. I'll send a text from the new number."
I think you should read that out loud. Tell us what the new number is so we all can call.
I don't know who this person is. It's like a phone number.
Oh, man.
This could be a wrong number for all I know.
Call it and say.
You heard how loud that was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Clearly, I need to address this text immediately. Anyway. If you could, if you're listening, download the latest version of the book, read through it. It should only take 6 months or so. It's a short book.
I'm already on page one.
Yeah. Just any feedback is appreciated at this point, because at some point I need to kind of write off on
how should they feed you back?
How should they feed me back? Well, email is fine, or you can do it through my through the website, winsupersite.com, or the windowsphonebook.com is fine, too.
This is great. Everybody who has a Windows phone should download this and help Paul out there.
Price is right, Leo.
It's free.
I can't guarantee it's a good book, but it is a free book.
Windowsphonebook.com.
Yeah.
Good tip.
I'm going to update it in about a month, too. I got to add some stuff about Nokia apps and stuff. But
yeah, the Hear apps. Yeah. What's your software pick of the week?
It was going to be Fresh Paint, but then I realized that Halo Spartan Assault came out, and that game is awesome, so I changed it. Microsoft shipped versions of Halo Spartan Assault for both Windows 8 and RT and for Windows Phone 8 this past week. It's expensive for a mobile game. It's like $6.99. I think that's pretty much where these things tend to max out, but the other issue is that, unfortunately, you have to actually buy them separately. If you want both, you have to buy both. But it's an Xbox Live game. It comes with achievements. I swear to God. I got the text from the new number.
That's good.
That's good.
Yay.
Did he sign it?
1408. No. But anyway, so.
Carlos Danger? I have some pictures for you, Paul.
Yes, yes. So this game is actually really good. It's not a first-person shooter like Halo games are on the Xbox. It's one of those kind of overhead view type games like The Hive or Diablo or whatever.
I love those games.
It's an action shooter, though. It's just like a, I guess you'd call it a third-person action shooter, but it's kind of a down-top view.
Top-down, yeah.
Top-down, yeah. Great graphics and sound, great music. I mean, the music actually, I think, stands up to a lot of the Halo music you see on the console, and a lot of people buy those albums like on CD or whatever. Or I guess now you'd buy them on whatever the kids are doing these days. But the cool
tracks.
Thing about this game, whatever, I think maxi singles are still a thing. So the cool thing about this, and I didn't notice this when I originally reviewed it, because when I got it on the phone, I had signed in with one live ID. When I bought it on the computer, I had signed in with a different live ID. But now I fixed that. And it supports cross-platform gaming. Not that you play between the devices. There's no multiplayer. But rather that, if you get to the end of level A3 or whatever, and then you put it down, and then you pick up a different device, whether it's a phone or another tablet or a computer, because you can use it with a keyboard and mouse, you can pick up the game from where you left off. So you can go back and forth. If you're at home, maybe you play on a tablet and you sit on the couch and watch TV and play the game. And then if you're commuting to work, you could play on your phone and you just pick up where you left off, and then you can again do the vice versa. That's cool. I mean, and I think. this is a capability I'm hoping to see a lot more of now that we see more and more multi-touch devices. And as the platforms converge a little bit more, hopefully they'll become even easier. And then maybe in the future there'll be a version of this where you can play online against other people or with other people in kind of a co-op mode. But they don't have that yet. Anyway, it's a great game. I mean, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of Halo anymore. I'm kind of tired of it. But this game is not like the first-person Halo games. It's actually a lot of fun. And particularly on Windows 8 and RT, which have really suffered from a game department, easily the best game that's ever shipped on those platforms in Metro, you know, like an Xbox Live game.
All right, now I want to Surface RT again.
You should. Yeah. Leo, here's the
perfect
thing.
For that.
They're really cheap right now.
Yeah. You can get a great deal. They're practically giving them away.
It's almost like they're taking a loss.
Almost.
How they do that.
Mary Jo Foley has our enterprise pick of the week.
Yes. So, you know, even though the Windows team isn't doing service packs anymore, as we know, the Office team still is. And this week, the Office team delivered Office 2010 Service Pack 2. And, you know, there are still quite a few people running older versions of Office. Not everyone's on 2013. And 2010 is not even that old. But the SP2 came out. It's available for download. Also, SharePoint Server 2010 Service Pack 2 came out at the same time. And the Service Pack 2s include all kinds of new compatibility, reliability, security fixes. And the most significant thing that's in these is improved compatibility with IE10, Windows 8, Windows Server 2012, and Office 2013. So if you're in a shop that's running 2010 and 2013, you definitely want to get Service Pack 2. It's available on the Download Center, and you can get all the different like Project Service Pack 2, and all the different apps have their own Service Pack 2s. There's a whole list of them. You can find them there.
Cool. And our code name of the week.
Code name of the week is something I first wrote about back in 2010. It's called Orleans. And Orleans is a cloud programming framework that a team within Microsoft Research built. It's called the Extreme Computing Group team. They built this. Last year, we found out the Halo team, speaking of Halo again, was using Orleans in developing some of the services for Halo 4. So things like presence, stats, and achievements. They were actually running these things on Azure and building them using Orleans. So we found out today, in fact, this very day, that Microsoft is opening a very small private preview for early adopters who want to try out this cloud programming framework. So you don't have to work at Microsoft. I wrote a blog post about it. There's a guy who's an Azure architect who actually put in his blog post, hey, if you want to be in the early adopter program, email me via my blog. And so if you want to give Orleans a try, it's for building really large scale, super scalable cloud services that are going to run on Azure. And you can use the .NET framework and .NET languages like C# and F# to actually develop these services. So it's a very, very interesting kind of concept behind Orleans. They have a whole new model built around something they call grains. There's grains and silos. So, you know, I had kind of had an affinity to that immediately.
Are there hops? That's the question.
Yeah, no hops. I think they need to add hops to this framework. Yeah, so check out allaboutmicrosoft.com. I've got the link to the guy's post, and you can go try to grab one of the coveted spots for the early adopter program.
Cool. And I don't think it would be a complete show, without a beer pick of the week.
It would not. And this is a fun one. So we talked at the beginning of the show about the Lumia 1020, and the code name of that device was EOS.
Which was unfortunate, because that's what Canon calls its DSLRs.
I know.
But.
Yeah. But I actually found a beer that has EOS in the name.
No.
For the beer pick of the week. Yes. Nebraska Brewing EOS Wheat is the pick. And I've had this beer. It's really awesome. It's just a little over 4%. It's a wheat beer, so it's awesome for this kind of weather we've been having out here on the East Coast, hot days. They've won all kinds of awards for this beer. It's a Hefeweizen, basically. It's a little cloudy, unfiltered, and it's really, really refreshing and delicious.
I love Hefeweizen-style beers.
I do, too.
In the summertime, especially. It's just makes my mouth water just to think about it.
Indeed. Mm. So yeah, it's funny. It's it's not a code name for the beer, but the beer is called Nebraska Brewing EOS Wheat.
Yos.
So there you have it. Yes.
Point and shoot beer. It doesn't have the right connotation at all.
It does not.
Mary Jo Foley writes for All About Microsoft.com, the ZDNet blog about Microsoft. And Paul Thurrott, of course, is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And his new book, help him out now, the Windows phonebook.com is in its first draft, and you can help make it even better at windowsphonebook.com. And we do this show on Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv. Love it if you do. But if not, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. Anything else to say before I tell Skype to drop you?
Skype has already dropped my video, so...
Oh, you're
got
kidding.
A nice freeze frame.
You're having one hell of a time today. I apologize.
Wow. No, it's not your fault. I
know, but I feel
it's like the Stephen King haunted technology story.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
I am going to commit homicide because of Skype.
Oh, no.
I am.
You can't murder a program.
I'm sick of this thing.
So what happens with this? What's going on with Skype? Are you still trying to use it on a Windows machine? Is that your problem?
Let me switch back to my headphones. As you may know,
yes.
Microsoft has integrated Skype into everything.
Yes.
And so when somebody calls me on Skype, every device in my office
goes off. Yes.
All right. This has caused me to uninstall Skype on most of my devices. All right, fine. But the thing is, normally, when you answer the answer Skype, they stop ringing.
Yeah.
But when you guys called today,
imagine
the Skype ringing sound never stopping. Just repeating on an endless loop. So I'm connected, but I still hear the damn thing.
That's
so
annoying.
Tried a couple of things. Thought
annoying.
I would shut down my computer. I shut down some Skype processes and task manager, yada, yada, yada. You know what it was?
What?
It was Skype integration, which was unannounced, and there's no way to turn it off that I'm aware of in Outlook.com on the web interface.
The web interface is suddenly ringing at you.
It brings up a new kind of a notification that says you're getting a Skype call.
Really?
Fine.
What a convenience.
But when I have answered it somewhere else.
You should stop.
Never. Stops.
That's not right.
Ringing.
Yeah, that's actually not right.
Yeah. And that sound.
It is annoying.
Whoever invented that is going to spend an eternity in hell. That is the most awful, awful sound to repeat.
Yeah,
God. Awful.
So how's the rest of your day going?
Until about 5 minutes ago, everything was going great.
Wow.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm Paul going, where are you? Are you there? Can you hear us?
Remember? Oh, there. I'm like the Manchurian candidate. I'm going to grab an axe and kill something.
Oh, Lord, that's mean. I'm sorry, Paul. I'm going to hell for that. It's funny because virtually all of our hosts, except for Mary Jo, at one point or another have been reduced to ranting piles of puddles of tears by Skype, and it's just. But for some reason, Mary Jo just soldiers on.
You know what? Mary Jo would know.
Yeah.
Mary Jo would know.
What
I should? Did they ever announce this? This stupid new integration with Outlook.com that you can't turn off. That has a special new kind of notification.
No,
it's like I'm being punished for using the services.
There must be a way to shut it off because I'm using Outlook.com and mine didn't ring.
Do you see that new notification? You don't see it.
Where would you see it? I'm looking at my Outlook. I don't see it.
Are you connected to Skype with a Microsoft account or with a Skype ID?
I have both.
Me with a Microsoft account and not a Skype ID.
All right. I don't know why you don't see it then. It should be there.
Is it part of messaging?
So, for example, Mary Jo, if you were to... send me a message over the Messenger network.
Oh, I'm not.
Yeah, I don't use Skype. I use Trillium.
No, that's not the point.
Doesn't matter.
But if you sent me it doesn't matter how you send it. I would see it in Skype. I would reply to it in Skype. But if I had my Outlook.com web window open behind it, I can see little notification windows appear.
So
it'd
be
there.
Here, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So actually,
but I'm not connected to Skype. I don't think. So I think I just have what is that? Messenger, Facebook, and Google.
Can I show you my screen? Is there some way for that to happen?
Yeah, but don't bother. There's a Skype here. Well, sharing, but it's
Mary Jo just sent me a message over whatever she's using, and what happens is a little blue. Yeah. Overlay appears on the Outlook.com web interface that has the message in it.
Right.
Okay, so that's annoying.
I need to hook
But the it. Skype thing now uses a new notification that has little buttons where you can connect to it. And the thing is, like, I actually tested this the other day with Raphael because I was like, have you seen this new Skype notification? And when you click on it to answer the call, you actually have to install a plugin. So I have not installed the plugin, but this damn thing keeps popping up. And
how weird.
The ringing sound never went away.
That's just a bug. They'll fix that.
I can wait for it. No problem.
I think it's a feature, not a bug.
Well, the ring sound should go away. It should ring, I understand.
Without telling us, don't give me a way to opt out and just fix it at your leisure. No problem. You know? Like, why? Okay. I'm okay.
He's feeling better now.
This is why I need to take up meditation right here.
This is why you need to go on vacation.
What is wrong with these people? No, I mean, seriously, like what?
Paul and I have both have rants. So this is good. This is good.